Hello, and welcome to today's City Club of Boise program. It's a virtual conversation with some mayors and a city manager of Twin Falls, and the mayors are from all over the state. Get some perspective into what this coronavirus, what this pandemic has meant to cities and city budgets. I'm Greg Hahn. I'm a City Club board member. I'm today's moderator. The program is delivered online, and so I want to welcome everybody who is listening, and sorry for that awkward start. Welcome to our radio listeners, as always. Join us from Boise State Public Radio, KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates. Today's forum is available for our audience in large part because of our City Club sponsors and our partners. I want to take time to thank a few of them. They help us achieve our mission to ensure compelling conversations, engage citizens in a dynamic community. Our premier sponsor is Northwest Nazarene University, and then NNU College of Business. Our annual sponsor is St. Luke's Health System. We also receive support from our foreign series sponsors, AARP Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Climatech Corporation, Concordia University School of Law, the Echelon Group, Micron, Pacific Source Health Plan, and Small Mind Development. City Club of Boise receives grant funding from the Idaho Humanities Council. Huge thanks to that. They did sort of chip in even in these times. As you know, they've been helping groups survive these weird times when you're like us and you survive on memberships and events. It gets complicated when you want to continue to do to meet your mission and you don't have that possibility. And so I do want to thank everybody who is a City Club member, or and if you've ever thought about it, sure, look into it. So thank you so much for that. So the panelists today, we have Mayor Rebecca Casper from Idaho Falls. Thank you, Mayor, for joining us from over there in Eastern Idaho. Mayor John Evans from Garden City, right around the corner. Of course, I'm doing this from up in Atlanta, which you probably can or can't tell. This is the beauty of where we are today. Mayor Ron Jacobson is going to be coming a little bit later from Post Falls. And then Travis Rothweiler is the city manager down in Twin Falls. So the 14-day rolling average tracker, which is what we do to keep tabs on what's going on in the state, I mean, it showed a pretty clear surge after Idaho reopened. And if you look at it, it looks like maybe it's leveling off, right? We've got mask orders going on. Those steps are being taken in Boise. They're being taken in cities and areas all over the state. But hospitalizations are still at their highest rate so far. The curves for the deaths, as we thought was going to happen, has followed the case count. And that's created what looks like we're still facing some serious issues. We had the most deaths reported in a single day in the state, the same day that the nation reached 150,000 COVID-related deaths. So I was going to put Mayor Jacobson on the spot because in yesterday's record amount of deaths, frankly, Kootenai County had the most of all of them. And so you would think that being up in Post Falls, he might be immune to some of this, and that is not the case. But maybe let's jump over to Eastern Idaho. Mayor Casper, if you wanted to talk a little bit about what's just the situation? What does it feel like there? What is Idaho Falls in a pandemic times like?
Well, I will just say that the stats we have are not broken down by city, right? They're broken down by county. And yesterday, Bonneville County had its highest single day, jump in cases ever with, 49 cases yesterday. Prior to that, our highest was 42 back on the 18th of this month. So we have been growing uncomfortably familiar with being in the state's top five counties, and being called a hotspot, which is very different for us. The Harvard chart, moved us on Tuesday. They moved us to the red zone. That's very different. We have 170 active cases right now, and that is not enough yet to overwhelm our hospitals. But I do I can tell you from conversations I've had, doctors are concerned about the trajectory that we may be on, and so we're hoping that our mask order will have an impact, although it's too soon to tell. I will say that Bonneville County has had well over half of the cases for our health district. Our health district has eight counties in it, And we've just in Bonneville County alone, we've had 63% of the 904 cases in our district. That I guess comes with being the most populous, having more people, you know, in contact with each other. But it is not rosy right here right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of an international community, probably more so than people realize, with INL and that cluster of industry that surrounds that. It's not like you can sit there in isolation.
You're not wrong. Although INL has done more than its part to curb travel, both incoming and outgoing, and that has, you know, helped a great deal. And so we are seeing a little less of that movement that we normally would see with regular business as usual.
Right. Thank you, and welcome. Mayor Jacobson from up north. We just started, and so
I apologize. I'm aware of the time difference, and I didn't even register, and I just walked in from a doctor's appointment, so timing is good. I apologize for being late.
Well, that's what a great example, though, of how tricky it is sometimes to get these statewide efforts to kind of come together and congeal. We literally operate in different times. I had just asked Mayor Casper to talk a little bit about what things are like up in or over in Idaho Falls, and of course Bonneville County, she said, had its highest number of deaths reported yesterday. I noticed that Kootenai County too is on that list. You know, almost half of the those reported last night came out of your county up there. If you could just talk a little bit about just sort of an overview of you know, what Post Falls has been like through this. I mean, right on the border, in between, kind of Spokane being a much bigger city nearby, but obviously with different rules going on. Just give us some insight into what this has been like up there.
It's been interesting to say the least. I never realized there were so many constitutional and medical experts living in our community. Panhandle Health District, of course, passed the mask mandate, and that was a circus. It wasn't a public hearing, but the meetings themselves were a circus. We've got people demanding that the city, the mayors up here, issue mandates reversing that decision. You talk about being a border community. I'm getting emails all the time that we need to start ticketing anybody who's got a Washington plate. They want to shut our parks down to anybody from Washington. We've probably got, I'm going to guess, almost 50-50 against masks and people that don't think there should be any restrictions. And as a result, it's had quite an impact on just the way we do business. We went back to live council meetings a few weeks ago, and you know, we require social distancing, et cetera, and people don't want to pay attention to that. So there's a big pushback from the people that don't want to be controlled by this virus. And as a result, it's had, as I said a minute ago, impact on the way we do business up here. City staff has done a great job instituting steps to maintain social distancing and to keep the city hall open, keep people safe. But we're getting more and more calls from people that staff have to respond to. So it's an interesting time, to say the least. And as you said, we had a couple more deaths yesterday. And the battle cry of those who are against anything to protect us from the virus has been, we don't have that many cases. We haven't had that many deaths in the hospital. Did not see any patients from COVID. Well, that's all changed now. And we are seeing deaths. The hospital ICU is at capacity. And we're seeing more and more cases. And the demographics, typically in the 18 to 29-year-old category. And I think if you do some analysis, that could be from the bars being open, people who refuse to social distance. But it's been a challenge. And the deaths of, my understanding is the deaths that we have had have all been in the 70 to 90-year-old range. So it is affecting the older people.
Yeah, Travis, how about down in Twin Falls? So what's the feeling down there? You're a little bigger than, the Post Falls, about the same, I suppose, as Idaho Falls these days, getting there anyway.
Yeah, so the city of Twin Falls and as a region, we've been working through COVID-19 almost since the very beginning when it came into the state. So it's important to remember that Blaine County is one of our neighbors. And when you're in our geographic area, we have about 260,000 people. So this has been part of our experience. So in our conversations, we've had you know, we're experiencing about a 3% mortality rate associated with those who contract the virus. To put that in perspective, according to some of the medical professionals at St. Luke's at the Magic Valley, 0.1% is associated with an influenza mortality rate. So it's a significantly higher mortality rate that we're experiencing. 29 deaths in relationships to automobile accidents is significantly higher, especially when you think about we've been having this conversation for less than 6 months. The most recent thing that we've experienced is the jail, which is operated by the county, has had an outbreak. I understand that there are more than 130 confirmed cases of inmates in the facility. 8 of the sheriff correctional officers, with an additional 100 cases as still outstanding. And then we have 1,000 cases, I understand, in our area that are in some form of the process of once they've been tested, they were deemed to be needing a test, and then they're still floating out there waiting for those results. The largest hit age group is probably very similar in Twin Falls as it is in other places, and that is 18 to 29-year-olds. They have nearly 26% of our total cases, while those who are that back-to-school age children, that 0 to 17, represent 7.67%. And it's going to be interesting as schools open up in the Twin Falls School District, what that looks like. And are we going to see additional community spread that's going to occur in the schools? I have to applaud Superintendent Dr. Brady Dickinson. I think that he and his team have put together a great plan that is going to, you know, help for the safe opening of schools. But again, you can only, I think we're all seeing there are only so many steps that you can put into place when you try to have a life of normalcy, whatever that looks like anymore, and trying to curb the growth of a virus.
Right. I think that's the question, is what is normal anymore, and who knows? Mayor Evans, you're sort of surrounded, you know, always such a fascinating and unique approach there when you're a city kind of within another city. And I think that's what makes it so interesting to kind of hear about really your approaches to everything, because it almost everything that happens there is so, and everything that happens in Boise is so integral to how things play out there. But what's been the feel there, and what's been your approach?
Well, of course, the metro area here is the largest in the state, and the virus ignores our political subdivision borders. We are regionally actually seeing some, if you were an optimist, some signs of optimism. We've got about 1,100 active cases now. Our ICU bed count is holding steady. We've got capacity there. We've got a slight downward trend over the last week in our cases per day that are showing up. But of course, we've had some preventative measures in place longer than other spots in the state as well. So as far as being a city surrounded, we, of course, cooperate in our twice weekly updates with Central District Health. And we've actually got some cross coordination with Southwest District Health, which is the county to our west, where the cities of Nampa, which is our third largest city in the state, and Caldwell, which I think is around the size of Twin, Travis, if I remember right. So we're hanging on. We're doing the program. We have voluntary compliance to some degree here, certainly more than Mayor Jacobson's experiencing up north. And really, I think we're sort of getting used to it, if that's possible. And people are figuring out how to conduct their business. And some are altering where they shop, how they shop. I certainly see the Amazon delivery trucks in my neighborhood really almost any time of the day. People are having groceries delivered. Our major employers here, Walmart, Fred Meyer, Riverside Hotel, are all managing the process well, although they're not confronting folks that don't wear a mask. They're seeing that there's some social distancing protocols that are, for the most part, being adhered to. So I think there's an attitude that we've got to ride this out, and that's what we're going to do.
Well, I'm sure you're all, you know, there's so many kind of pieces that I think we should touch on, and healthcare is one, and the economy, of course, property, what it gets into the nitty gritty part of running a city, the property taxes, and we'll kind of jump to all those. But I'm kind of curious a little bit about, you know, thinking about the economy, right? How are we, you know, you're all engaged in your local economic development efforts. You know, things are changing, right? You know, you, Mayor Evans, you bring up a really great point with the Amazon trucks. Now that more Amazon trucks may mean fewer folks down at the hardware store. And you know, grocery delivery that's made really easy by the big guys might make it a little harder on the little guys. And so the, every, we are going to go through this crunch. I'm just kind of curious, maybe in these, in your areas, have you turned to those? Have you started looking ahead at that kind of, how do we get out of this curve economically? And what's that kind of community discussion been like? And I'll kind of open that to anyone who wants to jump in.
You know, I'll jump in really quickly.
Yeah.
I'll say that I don't think that we have had a lot of time or opportunity to gather the right people in the room, because, you know, that's, we're not gathering in rooms right now, but right. We haven't had the chance to really dig in and have some of those dialogues. It feels like many people are still in coping mode. And so it's not time to pull people together to say, hey, let's think about the future and envision, right. You know, the post-COVID economy. But doesn't mean that the thoughts haven't crossed my mind and that I haven't seen, you know, dozens of national conversations along these lines. Just this morning, I was dialoguing with some city employees, talking a little bit about our mall. And I think that the news that malls are sort of a shopping model of yesteryear, that's not news to anybody. We all kind of know that malls are on the downside of their, you know, heyday. And many communities are dealing with malls that are struggling or struggling to find new tenants when old ones go out. The mall in Idaho Falls has been going pretty strong, and I've kind of been realizing that we're on borrowed time until this. And now in our mall, we see many fewer, you know, folks. We see some stores that are closed that it's just not worth their while to open up. We see that the in-person shopping experience has changed drastically. Trying on clothes is a very different thing. The older folks on the call or participating today might remember, you know, the Sears and Roebuck catalog, right? From 100 and something years ago on through until I was a kid, people used that. That was a real way of getting stuff. And then malls burst onto the scene. Well, malls are now fading. And all of that real estate may have to be repurposed as we all turn back to the online. And that invites us then to conversations that, which we are having in the state about connectivity. And are we treating access to broadband like a utility, like the utility that it is? It's going to become as vital as water and electric power in terms of everybody is going to need that for the economy of the future. So those are just a couple thoughts to throw out.
Right. Mayor Jacobson, looked like you had some thoughts on.
Yeah, we in Post Falls, we are still basically a bedroom community, and we have people that go to Coeur d'Alene or go to Spokane to shop. So in the city of Post Falls itself, I haven't seen that large an impact. We do have one particular aerospace company I know that has furloughed people because their work is mainly with Boeing, and Boeing is down a huge amount. I think he told me they were building 60 to 70 planes a month, and now they're down to 6 or 7, which has a huge impact on the supply chain. You know, we are looking to increase the commercial industrial businesses in Post Falls themselves. But on the retail side, we really don't have that many. Most of the restaurants, I think, are doing okay now. Maybe one or two have closed, but we're not seeing that big closure that a lot of the cities with a downtown area, which we don't have and are working on, or malls, which we don't have. We don't have that same experience. So from an economic standpoint, it is hitting us, but not the way that it would hit the cities who rely heavily on the more retail.
Right. Well, and speaking of that, you've got a two cities with pretty long, prominent retail stretches in Chittenden Boulevard through Garden City and Blue Lakes and Twin Falls. And Mayor Evans, the good news among my group of friends, at least, was that the Stagecoach was looking at expanding into an outdoor balcony or a little place to eat outside. So I know there's some innovative thinking going on over there.
Well, there is innovation. You know, we're seeing new service industries kind of popping up to deal with some of the impacts. Garden City, we have literally hundreds of very small service and production, fabricating, specialized fabricating businesses in town that really, before COVID, don't really rely on retail walk-in business. They've done most of their business online anyway. So they're continuing along. And I think over time, we're seeing people recognize that some common sense helps when they are physically shopping somewhere, even those, and this is just an observation, a personal observation of mine. People aren't, you have space between you and the guy behind you when you're checking out and that kind of stuff. So, I think our business community here is faring pretty well, particularly our service industry. We have a number of landscape maintenance businesses in town, for example. And of course, those crews never did shut down, and they seem to keep rolling along. The Stagecoach. I'll mention one other thing. Boise's done some good things. They're not really on the call here, but they've closed one of the streets downtown so that the adjoining restaurants can expand out into 8th Street there for outside dining, so they can keep folks separated and accommodate enough customers to make it, reasonable to keep the restaurant open. So we're seeing some of those things as well.
Travis, you did mention, I mean, Twin Falls, for folks who don't spend a lot of time down there, it really is the hub of, I mean, Wendell claims to be the hub of the Magic Valley, but the on their old sign, but Twin Falls is where the shopping is. It's where, it's really where everybody kind of needs to go. And so I imagine this has been an experience, at least for that kind of retail side of things.
All right, so let me try this again. So when I look at the amount of activity going on, it still seems to be pretty robust in Twin Falls. And when I pulled up some unemployment statistics, so in March, we had an unemployment in Twin Falls at 2.5%. In April, that jumped to 10.5%. And in the city, 12.7%. So, and today, that is down to 6%. So we're nearly back to full employment at the June numbers. And we're really looking to see what the July numbers look like. When we take a look at the total of new family permits that have been issued, in the month of June, the city of Twin Falls issued 63 single family permits compared to 31 last year. And we are issued 55% more permits this year in that category than last year. And our commercial construction, it's also up. So when we look at our retail service sectors, when we look at our construction industry, when we look at employment in general, I think like everybody, we saw that blip when we had the mandatory stay-at-home orders. But now we're starting to see kind of a soft recovery. And there's a couple of things that do concern me, and I'll share that as we kind of look forward to the economy. School opening is one of those things that I really have my eye on. I don't know if a tremendous political will or appetite among any of us, even at the state level, to roll the economy back into a stage 2 or a stage 1 that were described by the governor. But the last thing I was going to say is just talking about school and school opening. And I think it's going to be interesting if parents have to assist their children with virtual learning, what that's going to look like for our labor force.
And I apologize to folks who are listening at home. And this is, you know, just to remind everybody, it's a City Club of Boise Forum. We have the mayors of Idaho Falls and Post Falls and Garden City and Twin Falls. And really appreciate them coming in from their local areas. And I think my next question is really tied into a little bit of this technology piece and a little bit of what we're doing. I am actually in Atlanta, Idaho right now, where we're powered by a dam that is off the grid for anybody else. The power has actually gone off once during this call, but I have a little $35 battery backup that I plug my Wi-Fi router in. And it works. And most of the time, my wife and I can both work at the same time, though I had this and I asked her please to be offline for this hour, so just in case. And but, you know, if you can do this in Atlanta, Idaho, that changes the economic picture of Twin Falls and Post Falls and Idaho Falls, right? And your surrounding communities, right? This is the economy that emerges from this is going to look a whole lot different than the one that we were in when we got here. And in some ways, Idaho might be even better positioned from that. And I'm just kind of curious, as you guys have been kind of adapting to some of this digital remote work, how you think that may be playing out or what the opportunities might be.
So I'll just say, answer really quick. I think that Travis hit upon this a little bit in when we could hear him, and he was talking a bit about some of the growth that they're seeing there, and how he also talked about the unemployment figures. And I think the unemployment figures that he cited are very similar to what we're experiencing here. How interesting is it that in the middle of the world's, you know, biggest disruptor in practically a century, or maybe or since World War II, we are seeing that, we took a hit going from, you know, below 3% to, you know, 8-10%, and now we're below that. We're getting closer to what economists would consider to be full employment. That's a very interesting thing to have happening right in the middle of all of this. And I think part of it just speaks to the fact that Idaho is poised for growth, whether we are prepared for it or not, whether we like it or not. There is a lot of reason for Idaho to be an attractive place. And the more prepared we are to host those folks who want to be able to interact from home or from remote places, the stronger, you know, our economy is going to be because of that. So it behooves us again to look to our connectivity to be able to host all of this new growth that's coming in.
I would add that, you know, we're continuing to see growth as well. Handling it has really not been an issue, even though we've had to change the way we deal with contractors, et cetera, when City Hall's been closed. But we're seeing a continued influx of people from the west side of Washington, California. We're seeing people from Oregon. I believe we have the infrastructure, and we're expanding the infrastructure to handle the new businesses and the new people are looking to come in. What I find interesting is the unemployment numbers. You know, we get those reported, but I often question how many people that are unemployed have chosen to stay unemployed because of the compensation they're receiving now compared to what they could be earning if they went back to work. And we do have a lot of those. We're seeing a lot of help wanted signs. We were at a restaurant the other night, and they apologized for being slow, but they said, we cannot find employees. So we hear that unemployment has shot, you know, to sky high levels during this COVID virus. And yet there are people looking to hire and are having a difficult time. So the numbers are accurate, I'm sure, but they can also be a bit misleading, I think, just because you don't know what they comprise of. How many of those people who are not employed could be employed if they choose to be so. So it's a real interesting time to say the least, but we're seeing continued growth. We've slowed down a little bit, but it's hardly noticeable at this point.
Well, and nobody's more landlocked than Garden City. And I can tell you from the Treasure Valley perspective, we like to think, you know, we think of Atlanta and Post Falls as rural, but frankly, San Francisco and Chicago and LA think of Boise as the middle of nowhere. But those folks are moving into the Treasure Valley, and they're changing the wage differences. I mean, there used to be folks who would move from San Francisco, and then they would try to get a job in Boise, and they'd end up taking a pretty substantial pay cut just because of the way that, you know, our economy was different. Now they're keeping those jobs. They're hanging on to those tech jobs from Silicon Valley. And I imagine that's causing some big changes. I mean, Garden City's gone through as big a transition as any city in the country, probably in terms of, you know, having that, you know, sort of that kind of economic pressure come in. And it's made for some cool coffee shops and some other things that are really great, but it's probably created some challenges too.
Well, you know, we've seen redevelopment. We're seeing quite a bit of redevelopment. And we're seeing an interesting demographic that has really become popular. For anyone familiar with the area here on our east side of town, where we have a very successful, mixed-use opportunity where you've got high-end homes on the river, high-density housing very close by. And if you've got a good arm, you can throw a baseball and hit a place that'll fix your transmission. So, you know, we've seen that developing, and that really hasn't slowed down. You know, we're also, just to kind of maybe look at a glass half full a little bit here for a second. Our sales tax collection numbers are holding. Income tax is doing, collections are better than anticipated. I think all the cities in the Treasure Valley, our permits really, as Mayor Jacobson said, maybe slowed slightly, but really still very robust. People are coming, they're buying homes. We still have a significant housing shortage here, which is holding home prices high. When I'm not sitting on my throne here in Garden City, I'm sitting on a tractor out at my real estate development I have in Canyon County. And the folks we're seeing populate that really are from the West Coast. And a lot of retirees, people bringing their money. It's good for our schools, frankly, because we have folks without kids coming into the area, certainly in Canyon County, that are paying property tax, paying school taxes without any loading associated with it. So, you know, if you look, there's some positive things that are occurring for Idaho. And there's, you know, I'm optimistic that as we work our way out of this, that the state's going to hold its own as far as its own economy goes. So I'm seeing some pretty good signs here locally.
Well, you know, we have actually some questions a little bit about the budget. Of course, the state operates on a, you know, that famous three-legged stool: the sales tax, the property tax, and the income tax. And the income tax is pretty heavy to the state level, and the sales tax is pretty heavy to the state level. But and the local governments are really heavy on the property tax. But from what it sounds like, that the property tax is not something that's getting affected too badly by this. In fact, if anything, there's folks trying to find greener pastures, that growth uptick is going to continue to move those needles. How are you all feeling budget-wise this year?
Let me just really quickly comment on the property tax. It's sort of a two-edged sword. If we have growth, then the property tax might sustain itself, all other things being equal. But something else that's unique to the property tax is that it lags by a year. And one of the things that came with the bad news of the pandemic was the bad news that we'd entered into a recession. And at this time, we don't really know if that recession is going to be quick in and out or if it's going to be a lengthy one. We don't know the kind of impact it's going to have. the last recession was devastating to property values. And while that might, some people might say, hey, great, you know, my property values go down, my taxes go down. But what that means for your community is that a year later, they're reaping the lower taxes that come in from depressed property values. And they have, as we just talked about, probably a larger population to serve with less money to serve with. And so it's frightening. And so none of us are sweating property taxes this year right now. But ask us a year from now, and depending on what happens in the next little while, we could be in a very different place because of this. So fortunately or unfortunately, property taxes are not the only way that we finance our budgets, right? We also have fees, we have rates from utilities, we have the revenue sharing from the state, and then other miscellaneous, you know, small amounts of money and grants and such. But anyway, just some quick commentary there for you on property taxes, but I'll be quiet so others can share their thoughts.
Well, up in North Idaho, we're seeing property values continue to escalate. And even though we've seen this recession, property values have not gone down. We are seeing for the first time that I can remember, and I've lived here forever, people will list a house, someone will make an offer, and they bid the price on the house up. That's California-type stuff that we have not seen here before. My biggest concern with the property tax is the continued shift in our area from the commercial to the residential. So legislators talk about a tax freeze, et cetera. We're seeing a shift where the values on residential are increasing faster than the assessed values on the commercial. So our residential taxpayers are footing more of the bill, so to speak. But budget-wise, you know, we anticipate a small decrease in revenue. But as Rebecca said, with the fees, et cetera, we're fine. You know, we have no intention of taking a tax increase this year. And I think we've taken one in the past 10 years, and that was to offset a streetlight fee that was a fee that should have been on the tax. So we have not had to take a tax increase. And that does not mean people's taxes go down, though, and they need to understand that. But from a revenue standpoint and a budget standpoint, we feel pretty comfortable where we are and what the next year or two are going to hold for us.
But yeah, you know, you brought up, Mayor Jacobson, that you were surprised at how many health experts that lived in your neck of the woods. My recollection as a statesman reporter covering state government was that they were all property taxes. And have been for some time. So, Mayor Evanson, imagine a similar story in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, our budget's in good shape. You know, you naturally constrict when something like this. So things that weren't mission critical, we've held off on. We won't be taking an increase in the coming year. We'll be monitoring certain service levels, and there's some projects that we'll defer until we get on a different cycle. But, you know, we're seeing the shift very dramatically from ag and commercial to residential here too. And it's created a real, it's created pressure on legislators when people complain that their property tax is high in these fast growth areas. And I think we have to be very cognizant of reminding and maintaining a relationship with our legislators so that we don't, so that they don't overreact or act in a way that to deal with a issue in a few cities around the state at the expense of others. So we have to remember that most of our cities in Idaho, there's only 20 cities in Idaho that have a population over 10,000 people out of the 200 cities. So keeping that in mind, we serve on our Association of Idaho Cities Board of Directors, those of us on this call. And so we got to keep that picture in mind too. But we're going to operate pretty much normally through our 2021 budget. And we're going to be fine. And I think it goes back to what I mentioned in my last little opportunity to speak, which was our revenue sharing numbers look like they're going to hold. And the property tax, certainly in this area, our values continue to rise. And I think how we deal with the tax shift is the big issue we have. And of course, remembering that probably an average property taxpayer, certainly in the fast growing areas, about a third of their property tax bill has a nexus to school taxes.
So Greg, this is Rebecca again. I was just going to say that even though right now, this month, as we're setting budgets for the coming fiscal year, we are seeing that our property valuations have gone up because of growth in our state. And so we're all, to a certain extent, able to say, yeah, things are okay. Let me just tell you that we're in the fourth quarter of this fiscal year. And in the first three quarters of this fiscal year, the moment the pandemic hit, our revenues for the city did plummet. We're at a 5% decrease in revenues. And that's a significant amount of money for us. That's $2.5 million. We can't make $2.5 million in 2 years of increasing our budget at the maximum 3% statutory level. So we have lost a lot of money this year. So things aren't like fine. They're just fine as in we can get through an emergency. But we've had to lay people off in several departments. We have positions that aren't being filled now. We have a hiring freeze. We will have in the coming year many positions in order to make the budget, pencil. We have many positions that are going to go unfilled. Police and fire are not at capacity in terms of having enough firefighters and enough officers available to, avoid costly overtime concerns and things like that. So we're not sitting in a pretty spot, but we're doing what we have to do to get through this gracefully. And we can do that. Idahoans, Americans, one of our key identity points is that we believe in how resilient and resourceful we are. And that's certainly happening. I think city employees have that quality in spades across the state. But we have some adjusting to do, and some might say, well, that's just good, healthy downsizing. It really depends on what consequences you want to see. One of the consequences of not having enough first responders might be that it takes longer to get to the emergency. That could mean, more fire burning, destroying more property. That could be someone who's missing critical minutes when the ambulance can't get there when I wish it could. So there are costs associated or consequences associated with some of these cutbacks. So there's that. Another really interesting consequence is all of our cities, to a certain extent or other, we offer utilities. And when you have folks that can't pay their way, they can't pay their utility bills, we don't have the luxury like the federal government of printing more money or of somehow just going into debt. We have to pay all of our bills, each year. And so if we have folks who aren't making their utility payments, guess what? The others have to make those payments. We have to raise our rates. We haven't really tested where we are because federal stimulus money, federal $600 a week, checks on top of unemployment, those things have sort of forestalled or postponed some of the economic consequence, but as some of those things expire tomorrow, we might start to feel in the coming weeks and months some of that impact to our utilities, some of that impact to our just our local economies, as maybe folks are evicted, whereas they haven't been able to be evicted thus yet, and so we're not out of this, and the impacts are very real. It's just that we know how to get through a short-term pinch. The problem really comes for cities when that short-term pinch gets stretched out over 1 or 2 years. Then we start having real expensive impacts to all of that delayed maintenance and all of that deferred hiring. So it's not rosy. It's just, it's half full and half empty at the same time. I'll just leave it at that.
Wow. And in budgets that rely on on property taxes to a degree. And in a place where the property taxes are going up because the values are going up, it doesn't mean that all of us who live here just got much better jobs. It just means the folks who came in here had some of that house money that they could spend. I mean, it does make a difference in that, you know, that, you know, Mayor Evans said they didn't, you know, what forego the increase that they're allowed in the process to increase the city's part of the tax base. So did the city of Boise. You know, and that's kind of a nod, I think, to, you know, this pinch that everybody's feeling. I mean, the way you describe the city, Mayor Casper, is kind of exactly how I feel about my own budget, right? It's like, I'm okay right now, but how long is this thing going to really last? And I think that's, you know, politically, that's, you know, the world that we're all living in. You know, we just have a few minutes left, and you know, we sort of talked a little bit about mass compliance and all that, but do you think, I'm just kind of curious from that local perspective, actually, you know what, I'm going to ask this one really great question, and I don't know if any of you are doing this. The city of Boise is trying to monitor the water so they can kind of figure out whether there's, you know, the virus is sort of in the wastewater, or is anybody else going down that road in your sewer system or septic system?
Post Falls is not.
We are not.
We contract with Boise, so we are.
So hopefully they'll tell you how sick you are at some point.
Unfortunately, they can't identify a source point, you know, from the monitoring stations yet. Right. But I'm not really sure how valuable that is. I haven't heard too much about it lately.
Beyond the percentage of beef eater gin in the stagecoach crowd in Garden City, there's probably not much else identifying it. It seemed like you'd have to have a pretty big system to do that. But let's talk a little bit about kind of looking ahead and I appreciate you mentioning Mayor Evans, the Association of Cities, that we appreciated that association working with the City Club and getting this thing set up and getting you all engaged here. And that's been a really kind of a useful thing. We, of course, at City Club, we do focus on the issues that hit the city of Boise, but there's so many things that I think bring us together, especially times like these, that it's really valuable to hear these other perspectives. But, you know, I think kind of, where are you feeling looking ahead here? I mean, do you think there's going to be more severe restrictions? Do you think that folks are, you know, we just found out, you know, the New York Times reported, now the state's been following up on some White House guidance that says, hey, Idaho, you should be doing more. We'll see how much that sticks. I mean, I think that there's some conflicting information coming out of that space, but, you know, what's next? What's next for Post Falls, Idaho in the next 6 months?
I think it's live and learn at this point. There is the mask mandate is such a divisive issue that we've got people who will intentionally go out and defy the order of Panhandle Health District to wear masks. And I anticipate that we will start seeing people at our city council meetings to protest it, even though it's not our decision. Many of the stores and restaurants are now requiring masks, and there are people that just refuse to comply. So, you know, as we move forward, we are going to adhere to the Panhandle Health District's requirements. We hope people adhere to the governor's requirements for stage four. But I've never seen such a divisive issue in our community. And so I think the future at this point is unknown. We've talked, the school districts have, our school district has a plan in place. There's four different stages that they will utilize to determine how they're going to open this year. And as I believe the number was, they surveyed parents in the school district and almost 50% of them said our kids will not wear masks, period. Well, it's pretty difficult to open school in person when you are requiring masks and the students won't wear masks. So our school districts have a very challenging job trying to figure out how to get the schools open in a safe manner when we've got that high a percentage of parents who will not let their kids wear masks. And I think that's not just in the school districts. I think that's basically citywide and region-wide. We're getting more and more pushback from people who refuse to wear masks and for various reasons. And that's one of the reasons I mentioned earlier, we had so many medical experts in our community. and people decide that masks are not healthy, they're dangerous, et cetera. And so as we move forward, it's just going to be, in my opinion, we're going to take the steps necessary to protect ourselves and our folks, our citizens. Whether or not they comply is the million-dollar question. And hopefully by wearing masks over the next 2 to 6 weeks, we'll start seeing a decrease in the numbers, because our numbers have been going up and our hospital is at capacity in the ICU.
Right, and you wonder if it's one of these things that you kind of have to see some of that firsthand. I mean, or someone you care about or someone you follow. I mean, I saw the news today, Herman Cain, who they said contracted the virus at an event, he passed away. It can be pretty severe. It's something we worry about at Boise State as we try to come up with a plan to bring folks back. I think we lost Mayor Evans, who had a 1 o'clock thing, and Travis, I might spare you the horror of trying to speak again, but thank you so much, and thanks to Mayor Evans for being here. But Mayor Casper, maybe just kind of looking ahead a little bit, what do you think kind of over in Eastern Idaho, how things might shake out?
Well, a couple quick thoughts. One is that, you know, you're speaking to government officials, right? And we wouldn't have jobs if government weren't a thing. And government is premised on the concept of the rule of law, right? And as those of us who are elected go to assume our duties, we swear an oath to uphold the laws and the Constitution of our community and our state and our nation. And right now, Idaho state statutes do give authority to cities. They give authority to health districts to be able to issue, you know, orders and to take steps to act on behalf of preserving public health. And so as these orders are issued, whether they're issued by cities or by health districts, they become law for that, you know, jurisdiction, or those jurisdictions, plural, and it's my duty, my legal obligation to uphold those in whatever way I can. It's not practical for the community to go out and try to police that. We certainly can do that, but we have, you know, a hierarchy of calls we have to send our limited number of officers to, and so obviously we're not going to run to issue masking citations when we have other more egregious crime occurring somewhere else. And so we are relying on people to quote police themselves. But with that, I have been surprised, and Mayor Jacobson has alluded to it, surprised by how many people are expecting that the city will overturn something that the health district has done. And I'm thinking that that civics class you take in high school really needs to be beefed up a little bit. Right now, I think civics class in high school tends to focus on national level government, and that's about it. And we need to get back to teaching people a little bit about how state and local entities operate. And I've been telling people that if they don't like the way that the laws are made, they need to take that to the state legislature. They need to take that to a constitutional amendment, or they need to take it to the courts. And I'm not encouraging people to start, you know, opening up lawsuits left and right. Hopefully you'll find a competent attorney who will tell you that, well, this is a state law and you need to find a basis for challenging the state law. It's not that mayors and county commissioners across the state are going, you know, crazy with trying to be controlling. And so this is a time for education. It's a time for government to try to communicate as effectively as it can why we're doing what we're doing. And that's hard work, especially when you've got people who are convinced based on their, you know, use of social media that they're right and everybody else is wrong. And so hopefully we'll come out of this a little wiser. The Spanish flu pandemic in the early 1900s taught a lot of lessons. Some of them we've applied successfully to this pandemic, some of them we haven't, but hopefully we'll be able to, identify all those lessons learned and move forward with a slightly different economy, with slightly more greater appreciation for teachers, with greater appreciation for essential employees, wherever they, in whatever businesses or industries they're in. I have just learned the importance of thinking critically and being a little more, I guess, careful about educating citizens and more thoughtful. I need to be more thoughtful about that. But here's the deal. One of the biggest things we've learned, and it kind of applies, and it's really not too brilliant here, but what I'm hoping is that if most of the people follow most of the rules and advice that we give them most of the time, we'll probably get out of this faster and our economy won't be damaged. And yeah, it might be a different economy coming out of it, but at least we'll have, you know, essential services and robust creative services going forward in the future. So quick thoughts.
Well, thank you. I don't think we could have scripted a better finish to this. And I want to thank Mayor Rebecca Casper from Idaho Falls and Mayor Ron Jacobson from Post Falls, City Manager Travis Rothweiler from Twin Falls, and Mayor John Evans from the only non-Falls city represented today, Garden City. Thank you all very much for spending this hour with us. And it's just a kind of a fascinating glimpse into some folks who are making some really tough decisions. There's not, you know, you're right about the state law and the, you know, kind of setting some precedent, but there's only a few people who are asked to say, if we take this extra step, it could save some lives. And that's a tough decision to make every day. And it doesn't land all that often on the shoulders of city leaders. And this is one of those cases where it has, but appreciate spending the time here and all the hard work you're doing. Thank you to everybody. This has been a City Club of Boise Forum. Big thanks to the Association of Idaho Cities who helped us pull it together. All right. Thank you all very much. And I hope you have a good day. Thank you guys very much.